tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of science fiction. Later on, From Suspense, from their final season on the air, but first it's X-1 with the story Jaywalker from April 17th, 1956 on NBC.
In just a moment, X-1, but first, after a hard day's work, there's nothing more welcome than an evening of variety entertainment. And that's just the tonic provided tomorrow night by NBC Radio. You'll laugh your cares away when good-natured contestants carry out the rib-tickling stunts dreamed up by MC Jack Bailey on NBC's Truth or Consequences. And later on, Groucho Marx peps things up with lots of spontaneous good fun and more of the friendly insults at which he's so accomplished. For a brighter, livelier evening tomorrow night, it's Groucho Marx and Truth or Consequences on this station. And now, stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Have a nice trip. Your seat number is 15. Next, please.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Jaywalker, by Ross Rocklin.
Intergalactic flight number 14 now loading at ramp 10. Intergalactic flight number 14 now loading at ramp 10. Please have your flight validation.
You walk from the waiting room down the long ramp number 10. The flight pack is in one hand, the validation papers in the other. Other passengers chatter behind you. You turn a corner, and there's the ship. A cylinder of glistening silver aimed at the moon. You feel yourself carried up the moving stair to the gaping entrance lock. A pretty stewardess in a blue uniform smiles at you.
Validation papers, please? Your papers, madam.
Oh, papers? Oh, yes, here they are.
Mm-hmm. This is Marcia Foster. You feeling well, Miss Foster?
Yes, quite well, thank you.
You have to make sure. Once in a while, somebody slips aboard with another person's validation papers.
What difference would it make if I felt well or not?
Great deal, I'm afraid. You see, the effect of a free fall in space without gravity can do quite a bit of damage in certain glandular conditions. I see you've passed your physical.
Yes, I'm quite all right.
Fine. Have a nice trip. The seat number is 15. Next, please.
You walk down the carpeted aisle to the plasticon seat. Her words make a ringing pattern in your brain. Are you feeling well, Mrs. Foster? Mrs. Foster is feeling quite well, thank you. Mrs. Foster has passed her physical examination. There's only one thing wrong with the picture. You are not Mrs. Foster.
Attention, please. Attention. In 1 minute, the flash walls will be raised around the ship. If for any reason a passenger is not feeling well or does not wish to make the trip, please speak up.
1 minute. You begin to wonder if you ought to go after all. You begin to think of how it happened. Why you're here sitting in this silver vessel waiting to blast off for the moon. What happened between you and Jack? What happened?
Honey, honey, I'm back.
Jack, oh, darling.
You miss me?
Did I miss you?
I brought you a little present from the moon.
What is it?
Open it and see.
All right, I will.
Try it on.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Took us 2 hours to pick it out.
Us?
Oh, me and Sue. Sue Egan.
Well, who's she?
Well, the stewardess on the ship.
Oh? Well, how long has she been on the Earth-Moon run?
Oh, I guess it's about a year now.
Funny you never mentioned her.
Oh, haven't I? Well, what's the difference?
Well, it just seems odd.
Hey.
What?
Well, you're not jealous, are you?
Is she pretty?
Oh, monstrous. 4 feet high and 3 feet around. And she has a big blue eye right in the middle of her forehead.
Oh, you're insane.
Come on, how about a kiss?
No.
Oh, lady, I've been away for 4 months.
Sorry.
I guess I'll just have to go back to Sue Egan and her 3 blue eyes.
Well, in that case... Here.
Oh. I have been away a long time.
Jack, I want to talk to you about that.
Okay. But could it wait till tonight? I am taking you to dinner, Mrs. McLean.
I'd rather talk about it now.
Okay.
Jack, we've been married for 6 years now.
Is it that long?
7 in July. For the last 2, you've been skippering that rocket to the moon.
I know.
3 weeks at a time, with only a week in between.
Well, I do get a month vacation,
Jack,
besides.
That is no kind of life.
Well, Marsha, I don't know what I can do about
it. You haven't tried to do anything about it.
I guess you're right.
Do you intend to try?
Marsha...
Look, I need to know.
Marsha, flying is my whole life.
But it isn't mine. I'm not going to spend 3 weeks out of 4 sitting here wondering if you'll come back alive.
Oh, now that's ridiculous.
Is it? What about my father who died on the Elsinore when it missed Mars?
Your father died as the result of a space maneuver that no pilot in his right mind would try.
They missed the planet. That could happen to anybody.
They missed it because they tried to warp the ship around.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, it isn't very hard to understand. A spaceship takes off with everything calculated to the last decimal point. It has exactly enough fuel to take it to a planet if it follows an exact course, an ironclad mathematical orbit.
Well?
Well, there was a jaywalker aboard the Elsinore.
A jaywalker?
Oh, that's what we call somebody who boards a ship knowing that he has no business doing so. In this particular case, it was a senator going to a convention on the moon. He had been taking endocrine treatments and kept it secret on his validation papers. He felt he had to attend this convention to muster some votes for his campaign. He didn't consider that he was jeopardizing his life.
Well, I still don't see how they missed the planet.
6 hours out, the senator began to die. The effect of the free fall on his glands was catching up with him. And the only way to reverse that effect is to reverse the spin of the ship. Turn it end over end. That creates artificial gravity, reverses the stress on the glands. The pilot took a chance. He did just that.
Is that why they missed the planet?
They lost their trajectory. By the time they recalculated their course, they'd passed Mars. They ran out of fuel and kept going until... Well, until they fell into the gravity of the sun.
And that couldn't happen today?
A pilot would have to be out of his mind to try a maneuver like that.
You wouldn't try it.
Risk an entire ship to save the life of one fool?
You wouldn't.
Well, Marsha, I can't say I definitely wouldn't. Right now, it's inconceivable to
Just as inconceivable for you to give up space flight for my sake.
Isn't it equally inconceivable for you to put up with it for my sake?
I've put up with it for 2 years. Jack, this is the end of it.
Now, what exactly do you mean by
that? I mean you have to decide whether you want a marriage and a family or a career as a space jockey.
Well, why do I have to decide? Why can't I have both?
Because I won't live this way. Nobody else does except a handful of wives whose husbands are crazy enough to have picked a profession like this.
Well, you knew this was my profession when you married me.
I didn't know it was like this.
Marsha, what you're asking me to do, I simply can't do. Wouldn't make you happy if I did. I'd just be walking around resenting you. Now, come on. Let's have dinner and forget this for a while.
No. You're not having dinner.
You'd rather stay home tonight?
No. I'm going to Los Angeles to my mother's house.
What?
I have tickets on the 6 o'clock flight.
Tonight?
Yes. Jack, I'm quite determined. I've made up my mind that I'd put it to you squarely, and if you refused, I was leaving.
Just like that?
Yes. I've had all I can take.
Marsh, for heaven's sake, can't we talk this over and make some kind of a compromise?
There is no compromise, Jack. It's all very exciting for you, tearing back and forth to the moon with glamorous stewardesses and all sorts of celebrities, but sitting here waiting isn't much fun for me.
Well, you could get a job. You could develop some interest.
That isn't why I married you. I want a home and a family and a man who comes home every night and talks to me about little, unimportant things.
And I'm not that man.
No. No, you're not.
Okay.
What are you doing?
I don't like people walking out on me, so I'm leaving first.
Would you mind telling me where you'll be?
I don't know. You can reach me through Intergalactic if you change your mind. Marcia, maybe we'll both be better off. We didn't have much of a home life anyway, just the two of us. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I know how you feel about not having children. Goodbye, Marsh.
There it was. You learned when you came back from Los Angeles 2 months later that he'd been seen in the company of one Susan Egan, stewardess for Intergalactic on numerous occasions. You learned, too, that he'd applied for the Earth-Venus run, the newest and most difficult run in the galaxy. And you learned something else, something that was going to change the whole course of your life.
Come in, Mrs. McLean. Sit down.
Thank you, Doctor.
I have some good news for you.
Yes?
You're going to have a child. Well, I thought you'd be happy about that.
Happy? Oh, yes. Yes, I am. Naturally. You debated for a long time, and then you called the Intergalactic office. Mr. McLean was out on the Earth-Moon run. He'd be back on the 12th, but only for an afternoon. He was taking off again immediately. They were so sorry. You were sorry yourself. It seemed as if life would not be worth living without Jack, especially now with a child on the way. You had to talk to him, to be with him. That was when you first began to formulate the idea of going to the moon with him on this run.
Attention, please. Attention. We're about to count down for blastoff. Fasten your seat belts and recline back as far as possible. The next sound will be that of the first stage rockets heating up. Do not be alarmed by the vibration of the ship.
From the bulkheads overhead, everywhere comes the deep rumbling sound. Some of the passengers look anxious, some excited. Some leaf casually through magazines as they lie on their backs in the reclining seats.
Those of you who've never been in rockets will find it an experience that will make you proud to belong to the human race.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2, minus 1, 0.
The rumble heightens. All emotion leaves you. Cold, ravening fear takes over. You try to close your eyes, your ears against it, but your mind won't respond. You look out the port and the scene is suddenly splashed with a rushing sheet of flame that darkens the sky and is torn from your vision. It's snatched away. The buildings, the trees, the roads vanish. A great soft uniform weight presses down on you. You push with all your might, but it smothers you, presses you back, drives your blood down, down inside of you. And then, quiet.
We are now 102 miles over New York City. You may unfasten your safety belt. The pull of gravity will no longer trouble you.
You unfasten the safety belt and sit in the seat, wondering what to do next.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Intergalactic Flight Number 14 out of New York Rocketport, Destination Moon. I'm your hostess, Miss Susan Egan. Your pilot for this flight is Captain Jack McLean. Our position at the moment is approximately 550 miles above Earth, and in less than one half hour, we'll be in free fall, completely without gravity. Our speed is currently 29,000 miles per hour. We should arrive at Moonport at exactly 6 p.m. tomorrow, Earth time. I wish you a pleasant voyage. If there's anything you need, Intergalactic is at your service.
Think to yourself, Everybody's here. Your husband, his loved one, and his wife. You watch her as she walks back along the rows of seats with an armful of the latest magazine recordings. A tall girl, about 29 or 30, dark brown hair, dark eyes. Not very pretty. The sort who would be able to talk to him about steam tubes and beautiful landings and solar storms.
Mrs. Foster, would you like something to read?
Thank you, no.
First time in a rocket ship?
Yes, could you tell?
You look a little green. You feeling well?
Yes, I'm quite all right.
It's just a touch of seasickness. Come along to the ship's hospital and we'll fix you up in the jiffy.
No, I'd rather just sit here a minute.
Of course.
Come on.
Let me help you into the ship's hospital. That's... Come on, take it easy. Now, come on. Now, you just lie down there. How are you feeling?
I'm scared.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
I think there is.
What is it?
I'm pregnant.
What?
I faked my validation papers.
Do you know what you've done to yourself?
I hoped it wouldn't affect me.
There isn't much I can say, Mrs. Foster. I'll have to tell the captain naturally.
But would it be... I mean, could I tell him myself?
If you'd rather, I'll call him. Stewardess to captain.
McLean, what is it, doll?
Jack, there's a passenger in the ship's hospital.
Well, what's up?
You'd better come down here.
Well, look, Susie, I've got my course correction.
I think you'd better come right down.
Okay. Charlie, take it, will you? I'll be right back.
He'll be here in a minute or two. Here, let me put this pillow under your head.
Thank you.
Now, what made you do it?
You wouldn't understand.
You loved him, and he's stationed on the moon, and you wanted to be near him. Is that it?
Could you understand that?
You mean not being able to have the man you love? Yes, I think I could understand it.
He wanted to scream at her, to claw at her face. She was going to live and you were going to die. She was going to share a life with Jack when you were only a dim sort of memory in his mind. He came in, moving fast with that kind of schoolboy gait of his. His dark face was frowning, but handsome as ever.
Now, just why did you... Marcia. Marcia, honey.
Hello, Jack.
Well, what are you doing aboard? Sue, this is my wife. Marcia, this is Sue Egan.
Oh, hello. I'll be getting out. Excuse me.
Well, what's going on?
Jack, sit down. I want to tell you something.
I'd like to say something first, Marcia. I've had a chance to do a lot of thinking lately. And if you think we could work it out, I'd like to try again.
You mean that?
Yes, I do.
What about Miss Egan? Sue?
What about her?
Well, I heard.
I'm very fond of Sue.
Yes, I thought you were.
But she isn't my wife. You are.
Was.
What do you mean?
I'm going to die, Jack.
Marcia, what are you talking about?
Jack, I'm pregnant. You see, we're a little too late.
Did you know this when you came aboard?
Yes.
But weren't you aware that... What about the physical?
I used another woman's validation papers. I paid her for them.
Why, Marcia? How could you do a thing like that?
I don't know. All I knew was that I had to see you. I had to be with you.
If you'd only told me...
I couldn't reach you.
Didn't you know what would happen if you took a rocket flight?
I know. I thought somehow it wouldn't happen to me. I didn't know that pregnancy was affected.
And if you had?
I would have come along anyway.
I suppose in a way I'm to blame. I'm the one who walked out.
Don't take the blame on yourself. I'm over 21.
Marcia, what did you hope to accomplish by this?
I'm not sure.
There's only one possibility.
Possibility?
Yes, excuse me. Miss Egan.
Yes. Come into the ship's hospital, please. Bring Petrocelli from maintenance. Tell him to come up here with a crescent wrench.
Yes, Captain.
What are you going to do?
Do? Nothing much. I'm going to warp the ship around, that's all.
Petrocelli was a big, easygoing man. Jack left me alone with him and Miss Egan while he went back to the control room. Petrocelli started to bolt a metal bed to the side wall of the cabin. Why are you putting the bed on the wall?
Because, lady, when he starts to spin the ship, that outside bulk is going to be down, not sideways. Centrifugal force, see?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, that's too bad, because I got other things to do besides explain. Okay, Susie, it's all yours.
Oh, is he always that rude?
Doesn't it occur to you that maybe he's under a slight strain?
Strain?
Look, Mrs. McLean, your husband's going to warp the ship around. The chances of his pulling off a maneuver like that without piling us up in the sun or in deep space are about 1,000 to 1. I appreciate that you wanted to see him and show him that he ought to be ashamed of himself for leaving you, but does it occur to you that all of us may lose our lives because of it? Including Petrocelli?
No, I hadn't thought about it.
Let's go. I've got to strap you into that bed.
No, wait. What will happen to me if the ship isn't warped?
Sudden floods of the adrenal glands, convulsions, panics, spastic secretions, and eventually, death.
What causes it?
Lack of gravity. We aren't sure just how. The purpose of spinning the ship is to press you up against the outer wall and create the effect of gravity through centrifugal force.
Do you think he can do it?
I think he's the best skipper in the intergalactic fleet.
That isn't the answer to my question. Can he spin the ship without killing everyone?
I have faith in him.
She loved him. She had faith in him. And you? You to whom he was married? You who carried his child inside you? Did you have faith in him?
Everything set in here?
Yes.
Good.
Jack, could we talk alone for a minute?
Only a minute. We have to get the new data into the computers. Susie, will you excuse us, please?
Yes.
Well?
Jack, don't do it.
Marsh.
I mean it. You've no right to risk all those lives just for me.
Marsh, I'm captain of this ship. I do as I see fit, and I can't do otherwise.
But it isn't fair to them. It isn't fair to you.
When we're born into this life, we don't make any agreement that says everything is going to be fair and equitable.
I refuse to let you do it.
You can't stop me.
I'll take my life.
I'm going to ask Sue to stay with you.
What about her? Don't you love her? Well?
Marsha, whether I love Sue Egan is not the point just now. I've decided to spin ship to save you and my son. Or daughter. If it means risking the lives of others, I have to take that risk.
Jack.
Yes?
Why are you doing it?
Because I love you.
It seemed to me during the next hour, through the haze of the drug they gave me, that I could see him. There was the curved silver board. Before it sat Jack, hunched like a harried bookkeeper on the last day of the month.
Okay, Charlie. We'll come to the moon obliquely at 0.307. We pass it, stop, spin the ship over once to check speed. Then put the tail down when we feel gravity at 7.035. And if we can do it with the fuel we've got, it'll be a miracle. All right, start the calculators. Engine room. Reverse tubes.
Reverse tubes.
Wait for new course vector 7073.
Ready for new course vector?
Set firing formula 2635726.
Firing formula ready.
Coming into course vector. Counting down. 7077. 76.
76.
75.
75.
74.
74.
7-3. Fire.
Fire.
recall much after that. There's the bulkhead pressing against you like a magnet, pressing harder and harder. Then there's the needle, and then sudden relaxation. Through it all, the stars and the moon and Jack and Sue Egan dance in a pattern of mist, and the words come back to you from long ago. The things he said to you when you were both in love many years ago.
When I fly the ship, it seems that all Earth watches me through your eyes.
A man comes to love the things he has to fight for, I guess.
How is she?
Hold tight, Marcia. Hold tight to me.
She calls you Marcia. This woman who hates you, who loves your husband, she calls you Marcia.
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 Marcia. Marcia.
Marcia. Marcia.
The curved ceiling, but a new curve. And soft rose instead of chrome metal. A new feeling, unlike Earth or the ship.
Honey, wake up.
Jack?
That's all right, honey. We made it. We're on the moon.
Moon?
Yes. You're in the new Lunar City Hospital.
You did it. You really did it.
Well, I've been telling you for years that I was the best pilot in the fleet.
Oh, you don't have to pretend. I know how you must feel about what I did.
I'm not pretending.
I was a selfish coward. I wasn't concerned about anything but my own happiness.
Marcia, there isn't any absolute scale for courage or kindness or goodness. I couldn't pretend to judge you or anybody else. I only know that I believe you're a good person. And I love you. With your faults and your good points.
I just wanted to be with you, Jack. That's all I ever wanted. I'm sorry I'm not brave and strong like Susan or you or the others.
Oh, honey, nobody expects you to be. Come on. You've got to save your strength. We've got to take good care of you.
He reaches down and touches your lips with his fingers. It's like a benediction. You know that you'll never again question his right to do the things that fulfill him. To take a silver ship above the earth and guide it to new planets. Our child will be born on the moon, we whisper to him. And our grandchildren in the stars.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Jaywalker, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Ross Rocklin and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Bob Hastings, Terry Keane, Raymond Edward Johnson, Connie Lemke, and Eugene Francis. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday from April 17, 1956 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday with your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, a broadcast of suspense called Formula for Death, starring Louis Van Ruten as a mad scientist and Walter Grisey, who is known on radio from the Big Town series and on suspense in this broadcast and their last ever on September 30th, 1962, and formerly known as the end of the Golden Age of Radio. This CBS episode heard months earlier on June 10th, 1962.
In a moment, Act One of Formula for Death, written especially for suspense by Jonathan Bundy.
Yep. Anyone for you, Safi?
Now, look here, Colonel.
You assured us you'd begin grinding the necessary lenses days ago.
Weeks ago, in fact.
I know, Colonel Humboldt, I know it.
Well, then why haven't you?
Because, Colonel, I haven't yet received my formula from Dr. Hoffman.
Dr. Hoffman?
Until he brings it here, there's, well, simply nothing that I can do.
You mean Frederick Bernard Hoffman?
Yes.
Oh, then heaven help us. Why, oh, why couldn't someone beside that old crackpot have been assigned to develop the formula for this lens system? Don't you know Hoffman, his reputation?
Oh, very well.
Well, then why pick him of all people?
Because, sir, he's the only man we can depend on to do it properly.
I don't believe it. As a matter of fact, I've been wondering why you haven't just fed the requirements into one of those electronic brains and let it devise the formula for you. In a matter of seconds. Perhaps, well, days, weeks, months.
That was tried, Colonel Humboldt. You know it as well as I do. And, sir, with no success whatsoever.
But it has been months now for now, literally months, since you promised us this optical system. And what has happened? Absolutely nothing. One of the potentially most important factors in celestial observation from a guided satellite must wait on the whims of a doddering old crackpot.
Crackpot?
Well, isn't he? Do you think I haven't heard of his silly hobby, his preoccupation with the supernatural? His ridiculous belief in psychic phenomena, his conviction that he himself is endowed with supernormal powers.
Who knows? When you consider some of the miracles of engineering that Hoffman has made possible, well, perhaps he is.
Oh, yes? Well, then why doesn't he send you the formula telepathically instead of holding us up this way? Isn't there anything you can do to hurry him up?
Nothing whatsoever.
So our entire science program waits for him. Just wait.
The entire world waits, Colonel. Including our enemies.
Oh, I tell you, it galls me to twiddle my thumbs while this superstitious old man with a single specific piece of knowledge spends his time communing with the spirits.
Including our enemies, Colonel.
What's that?
Please don't forget that, sir. Because there isn't a country on Earth that wouldn't do almost anything to have this formula. Or to keep us from having it.
If he ever completes it.
Oh, of course he will. But in the meantime, sir...
Well, then why doesn't he?
In the meantime, Colonel, I hope you've done as I asked.
You mean the guard about that little place of his up in the country?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We've had two or three men on duty up there 24 hours a day, watching him and his apprentice. Apprentice. Apprentice what? Do they work on his formula? No. All they do is putter about in his flower gardens and feed the birds.
But as soon as he is ready, and it should be sometime today.
Today. Today, you say. No, next month, more likely. Next year, perhaps 2 years from now.
Do you realize how long it took to develop the famous Delocar lens that first made an efficient bomb sight practical? Do you know how long it took Hoffman to develop that? Over 3 years.
Hoffman provided the formula for that?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Well, I didn't know.
And at that time, too, we clothed his work in utmost secrecy, kept his little country place under guard.
And he worked completely alone on it, the way that he supposedly is working on this?
Colonel Humboldt, you may be sure that every waking minute that magnificent mind of his is working.
Uh-huh.
He is working on it.
Well... But what if something were to happen to him, eh?
Well, that is the risk we take.
I see.
And now, since we may receive word from Hoffman almost any minute, if he keeps his last promise to me...
Yes, if.
I know, Colonel. You are no more impatient than I am, sir. It's only that I understand this man, his odd foibles. In any event, I suggest that we discuss the safeguards that must be taken, the escort that will be necessary to ensure his getting here safely.
Yes. Yes, yes, by all means.
Yeah. Of course. If a tertiary curvature of 16 degrees from the axis B equals 1 plus A over E to the nth power... Yeah. Then, the cube of cosine R will automatically compensate for any variation, the flexing of the meniscus, of course. And now, using Napierian logarithms to determine the hyperbolic function of the system with the factor V now equal to Y equal to the secant B plus R squared over 1. Of course, of course, of course. Oh, I have it, I have it. Stefan, my boy, come in here. Stefan!
Yes, Dr. Hoff.
Come here, my boy, come here. Look at it. I have it now. It is finished. The formula is completed.
Excellent, Doctor. My congratulations.
Thank you, my boy. And I deserve them. For this formula, Stefan, will forever stand as a monument in the annals of scientific achievement. A monument to me. And Stefan, only I could have done it. Because of my gift of communication with those who have gone before me. Because my powers are above those of normal men, are supernormal. So I must memorize it now. The square of the factor V equal to the secant B plus R over Y.
Excuse me, Doctor.
What?
Your copy of the formula now, so I can give it to Dr. Fernald.
Give you the formula?
Yes, sir, I'll need it now.
No, my boy, you do not understand. I will take it to him myself. As soon as I have finished memorizing.
Memorizing?
Of course, my boy, so that only I will know it.
I see. But, Dr. Hoffman, I...
Well?
Well, what if something were to happen to you?
Have no fear, my boy. Nothing will happen to me. The tertiary curvature of 16 degrees from the axis B equal to 1 plus A over E to the 9th power. Yeah. I have it. Get Mr. Fernald on the phone.
Yes, hello?
Dr. Hoffman?
Just one moment, please. Doctor?
There we are. Now the formula is only in my mind. So now, Stefan, I am ready to talk to Mr. Fernald. Phone, please.
Yes, sir. Here, Doctor.
Doctor. Fernald?
Yes, Dr. Hoffman. You're ready now? You finished it?
Yeah, it is finished. Today, as I promised you, I shall bring you the formula for the new optical system.
Oh, splendid. Splendid, sir. Now, we're all set up here to begin work on the lenses immediately.
Good.
Now, are you sure you wouldn't prefer to have one of our men drive you in here?
Of course not. I'm not a helpless old lady. I shall drive in myself.
Very well, sir. Nonetheless, although you may not know it, Colonel Humboldt has arranged an armed escort for you. They're waiting in some cars outside your home right now.
But of course I know it. I can see them from the window.
Then you realize how anxious we are to give you every protection, sir.
Yeah. To protect me or the formula?
Oh, well.
Yeah, I know. But you are no more anxious than I am for now. For it is I who have spent so many weeks in working it out.
Yes. Well, now I suggest you start immediately. As you leave your driveway, the escort will follow you.
I shall leave immediately.
Splendid, Doctor, splendid. I'll be waiting for you. Goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye. Armed escorts, he says he has provided.
I know. I can see them now, Doctor, waiting outside. Do you need them?
Of course not. He is an idiot. That will only make suspicion. Instead of protecting me, Stefan, that will only endanger me.
You think you might be in danger?
With this great secret I now hold, of course I am, my boy.
But danger from whom, Doctor?
Oh, does it make any difference? But Stefan, my boy, instead of the guard he has sent, I have a better plan.
Yes?
Yeah, much better. Only one that shall completely outwit anyone who might try to intercept me on this mission.
What is it, Doctor?
You will see. Now, first you fetch my cloak with the hood, the big hood on it.
Mm-hmm. And then?
Then you tell Mario, the old gardener, that I wish to speak with him.
Do you mind telling me why, Doctor?
Just wait, my boy. Wait and see. Now go get him, get old Mario, and bring him in here.
Very well, sir. You sure you wouldn't like me to drive, Doctor?
No, thank you. I shall drive.
You sound very happy, Doctor.
Well, why not, my boy? I have the formula now in my memory. And we shall have no trouble getting into Fernald in the optical works. In spite of all that armed escort nonsense.
That was rather unexpected, wasn't it?
Did you not see the guards about the house all the time for all these weeks? More nonsense. More nonsense. But we fooled them now, haven't we?
Yes. Yes, we fooled them.
That poor old Mario, all dressed up in my cloak, the top of it pulled down over his face. He looks so much like me, it almost fooled myself. And not one of those silly men with the guns could know it wasn't me. And then, when they were gone, by driving away in the open with his old cow, Mario's, you and I, we made no suspicion whatsoever.
It was very clever of you, Doctor.
But not necessary, Stefan. Because no one knows better than I do that there are certain people who would like to prevent me from delivering this formula.
You're quite right, Doctor. I'm so glad you thought of this.
Yes. Stefan, my boy, there are people who would stop at nothing. At nothing, my boy.
You're absolutely right, Doctor. As you can see, I hold a pistol here in my hand.
Unnecessary, my boy, unnecessary. Because everyone thinks we are in my car and far ahead and followed by the guards. No one knows that you and I are here, comfortable, safely. Stefan?
Yes, Doctor.
I see. Your pistol, Stefan, is not for my protection. My loyal apprentice has been one of them.
True, Doctor. And in return for your life, you will give me the formula.
No, Stefan, of course I won't. You know better. Now put down that gun.
I'm sorry, Dr. Hoffman, but there is no choice. Either you tell me the formula, slowly, so I can write it down, or I pull this trigger. I suggest you take the next little turnoff. We can stop there and be understood.
The secrets you must have stolen for them.
But this is the important one. Doctor, it's you or the formula. Well?
No. Never. I will die before I give it to you.
You'll die if you don't. Better stop and tell it to me, Doctor.
No, I will not do it.
Then there is only one thing I can do to keep you from delivering it.
Only one thing, eh?
Slow down now and pull into that neck.
Only one thing, eh?
Doctor, slow down. Slower, Hoffman. That curve ahead. Look out! We're going off the road!
The what? The gardener?
Yes, sir, Mr. Fernald. My name is Mario, sir.
But why did he send you in his place? What's the matter with Hoffman? Didn't he see the guards that Colonel Humboldt sent up there for him? Didn't he think that we'd protect him adequately?
Well, I'm sure I do not know, sir.
But where is he? Where is Hoffman?
He said that he and his apprentice, young Stefan, would follow along in my car, sir.
In your car?
To avoid any suspicion, Dr. Hoffman said.
Oh, fine.
He was afraid the two cars full of armed men would only attract attention, would only make it dangerous for him.
Oh, he did, eh? But where are they now? Where are they?
Maybe if Colonel Humboldt sent out some of his men to look for them...
The Colonel's men have been backtracking that highway ever since you got here. Oh, my dear, if anything happens to Hoffman...
It was very amusing, though, sir.
Did you say amusing? What can be amusing about a situation like this?
Well, I mean, when I got here, and even Colonel Humboldt himself thought I was Dr. Hoffman.
Amusing, eh? Well, let me tell you something, Mario. Humboldt, any luck? Have your men found Hoffman yet?
Oh, no, Fernald, no, I'm afraid not. All we know, and that was from a phone call to a neighbor, is that Mario here has told us the truth about Hoffman leaving there in Mario's car.
How long will it take your men to get to his house out there?
Well, as a matter of fact, Fernald, they've already been there.
Oh, they've already been... Oh, excuse me.
Surely.
Fernald speaking.
Sergeant Granby, Mr. Fernald.
Yes, you found him?
We found his car.
Yes.
Completely wrecked, sir.
What?
It went over a cliff at a curve. Must have gone over at a very high speed, sir. Complete wreck.
And the doctor?
His body was inside of it. Oh. He must have been killed instantly.
I see. Very well, Sergeant.
No sign of the assistant, though. The young scientist who worked with him and left with him.
Thank you, Sergeant. Well?
Well, Fernald?
An accident. Hoffman is dead.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And with him, the formula.
But I don't understand about his apprentice, Stefan. He's disappeared.
His apprentice?
Yes. Stefan was with him. He left there with him.
What are you trying to do?
Why isn't he dead?
Of course not. You can't go in there.
What is that? What is this going on?
Don't you understand? I'm Dr. Hoffman.
Bernard, what is this?
Well, I say you're not Dr. Hoffman.
Hoffman?
I'm sorry, Mr. Fennell, but this man here insists that he's
Stefan.
Who?
Which? Stefan, what happened to you?
Why do you call me that, Mario? Don't you know me? Your own employer.
But you are Stefan.
Of course you are. But good heavens, man, you're hurt and badly hurt. Now, what happened? What happened to you?
I had to crash the car to save the formula.
Must be suffering from shock. He needs a doctor, I think. Wait, Colonel. Here, my boy. Sit down.
Here, over here, my desk.
Badly bruised and bleeding. Now, there. Now, Stefan, tell me.
Well, you call me that, too.
What?
What is the matter with you? Don't you know me? I am Hoffman.
The doctor. There's no time to lose, yes?
Yes, there is no time. I must give you the formula while I can.
You?
Paper. Pencil. Quickly, while I'm still able.
Well, of course, yes. Yeah. But how do you know it's done?
I tell you, I am Hoffman speaking to you. Now, quiet, please, while I still have strength to give the formula. The giant eyes for joyful tertiary curvature of 18 degrees from the axis B, which is equal to 1 plus A over E to the nth power. Yes.
This man is out of his mind. That must be gibberish. He thinks he's Hoffman.
Don't you see, Humboldt? Don't you see what he's writing? The formula. The Hoffman secret.
What?
You see how the various factors in it fit together almost miraculously. Look. It's as only Hoffman himself could put it down.
But
it's almost as though Stefan were possessed of Hoffman's spirits.
Good heavens, Fernald. You mean you really think that such a thing is possible? Well, I know that Hoffman talked about the supernatural, but this...
There, gentlemen, it's finished. I promised I would bring it to you, and I have.
Now, look, my boy, look.
But now I must lie down.
He's fainted. No wonder with those injuries.
Mario, open that window and fetch some water.
No, wait. Fernald. Yes. Look, he seems to be trying to say something more. It might be important.
Well, I bring positive denial, but that I am sworn never to reveal. Yes, Dr. Hoffman, I will tell. I am Stefan Heron, American educated since 16. But my prior rigorous training was as a spy. I have scrupulously avoided contact with my government. Waiting for the right time. The formula for the lens system clarifies it to everything.
Unbelievable. You think so, eh? Wait a minute. Here. Look at this. The empty holster on his hip. And here. Here's a smaller gun right here inside his belt.
Oh.
Humboldt, he's coming too. Fernand, if Hoffman is dead, it's because this man killed him. Oh, not with his gun, perhaps. It hasn't been fired.
No, do not shoot me, please.
No, shooting would be far too good for you, Stefan Heron. It is Heron, isn't it?
Yes. I am Heron.
All right. Now, how did you do it? How did you kill him?
No, I did not. He tried to kill me.
To get the formula, that's why you killed him.
I tried to force him, but he wouldn't tell me.
What?
He wouldn't tell me. He made the car go faster and faster. And then the curve, and the car went over.
No, wait, Stefan. You say he didn't give you the formula?
No. But I am content. You hear me? I am content. Because you and your country, you don't have it either. He wrecked the car. He's dead. He can't give it to you. Nobody knows it.
Wrong, Stefan.
What?
Because Hoffman has given it to me.
He has?
Yes. Through you.
I still can't believe it, Fernald.
I know, Colonel. I know exactly how you feel. And that is the reason I talked with the psychic investigator, a man who's an expert about the so-called supernatural.
Oh, you did. Well, what did he say?
Only that there are many cases on record in which an injury, especially one to the head, has resulted in temporary personality control of the sort that we witnessed, of Stefan taking on Hoffman's personality. I understand such cases are well recognized by the psychologist.
Yes, but what of Stefan's temporary knowledge of the formula, Fernald? The formula that existed only in the mind of Dr. Hoffman while he was alive.
Possibly, this psychic investigator told me, possibly, Colonel, it was a case of thought transference. Yes, thought transference occurring as a result of Hoffman's tremendous concentration on his formula at the moment of his death. But who knows? What do you think?
Suspense. You've been listening to Formula for Death, written especially for Suspense, by Jonathan Bundy.
Suspense from the 10th of June, 1962 on CBS. Bringing to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.